Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook Home hits 500,000. Is that good or bad? We talk about why the shine might be off Apple in investors' eyes and Microsoft bringing back the start button. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, April 22nd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT4. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of 200,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/TNT to receive a free design consultation. That's 99designs.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And a big thanks to Zach Holder for that intro today on the video version. This is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the top stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 of the day in the news feeds. Germany fined Google €145,000 for collecting Wi-Fi data with its Google Street View cars from 2008 until 2010. Hamburg data regulator Johann Kasper told Bloomberg it was one of the biggest data protection rules violations known. Google has since rectified the data collection process for Street View cars, but has paid fines in other countries such as France.
Facebook has reached 500,000 downloads, Facebook Home, rather, on Google Play since launching internationally on the platform about 5 days ago. Around 100,000 downloads a day sounds pretty good, but not necessarily if you're Facebook, which has over 1 billion users. And consider that when Instagram launched on Android last year, it hit over 1 million downloads in a single day. Along with some pretty bad reviews in the Google Play Store, you have to wonder if chat heads just aren't going to stick.
Last year, a British parliamentary committee accused several companies, including Google, of immorally minimizing the taxes they pay to the UK. Google's chairman, Eric Schmidt, says his company fully complies with the law, and if the law changes, Google will comply with that too. In the past 6 years, Google's tax credits have exceeded its tax payments. Maybe the UK wants to Google how to change the law.
China Business reported an anonymous Foxconn employee says Apple has started returning 5 to 8 million iPhones for not meeting Apple's standards. No word whether these were current iPhones or a first run of a new iPhone. Citi's Glenn Young claims the next iPhone has been delayed 1 to 2 months for an expected August or September launch due to volume production issues.
Google I.O. is right around the corner, and the latest news is that Google Now may be coming to both iOS and the desktop. Newly discovered code in a Google page hints that it might be part of the standard web search interface if you opt into it. Source code for the page in testing encourage you to, quote, get started with Google Now because it provides just the right information at just the right time.
Yahoo is on a tear with its apps. After launching new mail and weather apps last week, Yahoo just released a new version of the Yahoo iOS app, and it features Summly integration. Yahoo recently purchased Summly, which summarizes news articles. The new Yahoo app looks a lot like the weather app, with images underneath cards of text featuring news summaries. Right now, the brand new app is available in the U.S. and is designed for the iPod Touch and the iPhone.
Anonymous activists, as well as many organizations, are calling for an international blackout today on the internet to protest the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, aka CISPA. CISPA supporters say it is necessary to allow private companies to share more data with government agencies in order to stop criminals. Opponents say it does not provide adequate safeguards for your privacy.
Japanese authorities are asking ISPs to block the use of Tor in order to more effectively combat cybercrime. According to the Mainichi, the National Police Agency, or NPA, is planning to ask ISPs to block customers if they're found to have abused Tor online. Since Tor anonymizes traffic, that can be messy, though. Last year, a hacker named Demon Killer was posting death threats on public message boards. The police arrested four people whose IP addresses had been used. Even managed to get a confession, but then had to apologize when the hacker kept posting messages while those suspects were still in custody.
Tax-free online shopping in the U.S. may end soon. The United States Senate plans to vote today on a bill allowing states the authority to collect sales tax on all internet purchases. The Marketplace Fairness Act changes the current practice of requiring a business to have a physical presence in the state before taxes are collected. The legislation would also attempt to simplify state tax laws and move them towards uniformity.
The European Commission says it sent out objections to a number of chip companies for price fixing. The EC says that several companies formed a cartel to control prices for chips you'd find in bank cards and SIM cards. The commission did not name which companies it is investigating, but chipmaker Infineon confirmed with Reuters that it received a statement of objections from the EC. The world's largest maker of smart cards, Gemalto, said it was not being investigated.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. Those are our desk phones right here at Twit. And when we built this studio that they do Twit out of, they chose to do as much as they could through the cloud. Store documents, hold meetings, all that good stuff. And we didn't want to have to put in one of those big chunky things called a PBX system that most people have to put in if they want to run multiple lines in a business system with conference calling and all that. Well, Russell, our IT guy, said, don't do that. Get a cloud-based phone system. It was a no-brainer. We love RingCentral. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and RingCentral allows you to easily customize all your call handling. We can get voicemail in our email, get fax messages with those people who insist on sending fax messages. Go straight to your smartphone. And now they have a new feature. It's the RingCentral app for Salesforce.com. You can integrate all your phone calls with your CRM system seamlessly, create new records for contacts and leads, and create real-time call notes while you're on the call. Really takes your CRM to a more productive level, and it's easy to use. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now with a risk-free trial for 30 days. And they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you, because you're listening to this show, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, because one of you was talking, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank RingCentral for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss some of the stories in the news, very happy to have Rob Greenlee, co-host of The New Media Show, as well as happening to be content manager for podcasts on Windows Phone at Microsoft. Welcome, Rob.
It's great to be here, Tom and team.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. It's been great. Now, you're not officially representing Microsoft, but you are an employee, and The New Media Show is a great show.
Yes. Yeah, it's fairly new. It's only had a couple of episodes now as far as under the official New Media Show name. It actually has been around for many years under the Saturday Morning Tech Show name. So it's something that we're really drilling down and focusing on. New media topics and talking about, you know, YouTube and podcasting and streaming and all the fun stuff that goes along with that, just like what you guys do here every day.
Well, cool. It's great to have you along. We're going to start off talking about Facebook Home. You mentioned 500,000 downloads, Sarah Lane.
Yeah, 500,000 downloads in just over a week. Facebook Home had launched in the U.S. on the 12th and rolled out internationally around the 16th. And, you know, there have been a lot of comparisons to something like Instagram, right? I mentioned the news views. People were saying, well, Instagram got 1 million downloads in the first day when it came to Android last April. And the Facebook app itself on Android has, you know, between 100 million and 500 million downloads. Google Play doesn't release official numbers, but you get sort of a range. And, you know, I kind of think to myself, well, I mean, you can't really compare it to Instagram because there was Instagram was a wildly popular app for a while. So it was wildly anticipated on Android for a long time. Facebook Home is also a launcher. It's not really a standalone app. It's designed to kind of act in conjunction with the rest of your Android phone. And it's not on all the Android devices. Rob, what do you think? I mean, are these numbers disappointing or is it kind of an apples and oranges thing if you compare it to a popular app like Instagram?
Well, no, I think it's really early for this type of a concept. I mean, I mean, from how I look at it, it's just another app on the phone. But I think what Facebook would like it to be is something a whole lot more. They want it to take over your smartphone. But I'm just not sure that people are really thinking about it like that quite yet. And it's such a new idea. I don't know. We'll see.
As one of the things that people are pointing to is it's not just that there haven't been that many downloads. It would be nice to know how many uninstalls there have been, if only we could get those numbers. But a lot of the reviews in the Google Play Store are negative. In fact, over 50% of them are negative, and we've got an average rating of 2.2 in the App Store, in the Google Play Store, rather. So, I mean, is that just sort of the beginning of the end? Who's going to download this now?
I doubt it's the beginning of the end. It's the first version of this. I think for a lot of people, this is the first time they're getting their hands on a launcher. There's a lot of competition out there when it comes to that. And the thing about Facebook versus Instagram, Facebook Home versus Instagram is a bit, like you were saying, big pent-up demand for this application. I don't know if there's a lot of demand for people saying, you know, I don't like the home screen on my device. A lot of power users like to change their launchers. And when I was messing with Facebook Home personally, it was too simple. It was taking away features that I loved about other launchers. So the power users who ran to it go, this is wrong. This is not what I want. I think it's really going to find its home, no pun intended, until it gets on the first and these other devices where it's pre-installed, because people won't change that launcher and go, oh, okay, this is the way I use the phone, instead of it being, how do I change my phone the way it behaves? I think that's the real thing, integrating with the actual hardware.
Tom, do you think it's just a matter of time before Home is available on more Android phones and we'll see these numbers shoot up?
Well, first of all, I have to disagree with IS. I believe that pun was intended, sir. I think we will see it come to more phones, but I also don't think that's what Facebook cares about. And I think that's important when thinking about this number. We've mentioned a lot of reasons why it wouldn't be as big as an Instagram, and the limited number of phones is a big one. But also, Facebook wants to sell these phones with Home on it. Providing it as an app for you to download and play around with it, I think to them, is just extra marketing. It's you know, not limiting the universe of people that might use this. But I really do feel that their main focus is going to be on getting the phones that come with this pre-installed into the hands of people. Because remember, there's a couple of functions that are better when they're set up initially for you on the phone rather than downloading it and installing it yourself. So this is actually, I mean, if you look at it that way, to say like, hey, this is kind of just an optional thing we threw out there as an extra, 500,000 is great. We'll see what the sales of the phones that are pre-installed with this are. I think that'll be the real test.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any sort of customer kind of perception or kind of customer service perception from the fact that the only place that you can really go to review how people feel about the experience is the Play Store. And there, the numbers are so slanted in the not good at all. Is there any possibility that that affects anybody that might think about getting a Facebook phone? And they're like, well, wait a minute. All these people hate it, so why would I do it?
Well, if they look at the hardware itself, I would think they wouldn't look at the reviews of a software that would be pre-installed. So I don't think it'll affect hardware sales. But I think people will just go, okay, this is separate. Because Play is kind of like, I want to say almost aftermarket, so to speak. This is when you switch up things. But I don't think it's going to affect hardware.
Yeah. I think that this will not be the undoing of Facebook Home. People who are big Facebook fans, who are not big tech enthusiasts, going into the store and not buying this phone will be the undoing of Facebook phone, if it's going to be undone. Well, we'll have to see. Apple is being undone these days by a lot of folks. They're complaining about lack of innovation, lack of product releases. The stock has been slipping back. There's been widely reported that the iPhone keeps getting delayed, that there was going to be an iPhone. Some people are saying there was going to be an iPad. A Taiwanese source actually told Reuters that one of the problems is they're trying to find a coating for the next iPhone that won't interfere with a alleged fingerprint sensor that would be on it. Of course, we heard about Foxconn employees saying that 5 to 8 million iPhones of some kind were returned. Chip maker Cirrus Logic, here's a fact, not a rumor, warned of a drop in revenue next quarter due to one main customer. 90% of their sales are Apple, so it's pretty likely we know that one main customer is Apple. LG Display Company said it's going to report its smallest profit since it returned to profitability, down 74% quarter on quarter because of declining iPhone display orders. And that could be because of a delay as well. Now, Apple has their earnings on Thursday. That's why everybody's discussing this week. They're expected to report an 8% increase on revenue, which if that ends up being the case, would be the smallest in years. Sarah, do you think this is just the market correcting itself, that it was overinflated, overhyped when Apple was close to $1,000 and we're getting back to basics and nothing is really different at Apple? They always put out products when they're ready. Or is Apple really slipping and not innovating as fast as they used to?
I think, you know, as we've talked about before, it has to be a really pivotal year for Apple. I mean, Apple can't put out an iPhone that looks exactly like every other iPhone and functions the same way. We've got rumors of a fingerprint sensor and an iWatch, and there's all sorts of stuff that's like Apple has to do something to put it out front again, to make it cool again. And yeah, I think that the stock price was totally inflated at one point. You know, people say it's the most, you know, it's the biggest company in the world, that sort of thing. That's just, I don't think for a company like Apple that was ever sustainable. I think that, you know, when you hear stories about delays, and Apple has to work with a variety of, you know, chip makers and businesses that can find the proper coding that aren't going to interfere with a fingerprint sensor. It's like you have enough cooks in the kitchen and things are going to get out of whack sometimes. And I don't think that this is a problem unique to Apple. I think that this happens with companies all the time. But we look at Apple and say, oh, Apple, you know, on its grand high horse, all of a sudden feeling like another company where things don't always work smoothly. It's just the way it goes.
Hey, Rob, is that what you think might be going on here, is that we just kind of are holding, we get used to a pattern with a company, and when they deviate from it, we start to freak out?
Yeah, I think it's also a factor of high desire on the part of the user community to see this new thing every time Apple comes out with something. And if Apple is kind of focusing on just their business and making proper business decisions, it's not always around being at the cutting edge of what's the coolest device that is possible. I think it's around making smart business decisions. And sometimes that creates an environment where the company doesn't look like they're out in front as far as, and I think that a lot of people had really high expectations, and it's hard to continue that over a long period of time.
Yeah, especially when you had these, and they were ridiculously high expectations that were reflected in the stock price. I think you're right. The question is this pause just kind of accentuating that panic, and as soon as we start seeing new products released from Apple, that'll all be forgotten. It'll all evaporate. What do you think, Ayaz?
I think one of the things that made Apple's price so high was the fact they were coming out with products that were basically leaders. They were pioneering these smartphones again. They redesigned the way that worked. They came out with a tablet before, and everyone's thinking this is a silly blown up iPod Touch. Who wants this? And they've been received with such success that the fact that they haven't come up with a new product in a long time, and the competition is actually catching up at this point, that's scaring people. I don't think the stock price was overinflated. I think Apple was legitimately doing some crazy stuff in the tech world, but right now they're not doing these moonshot things like Google. That's why Google's stock price is staying so high. They're trying out all kinds of weird little things that you would never expect a tech company to do. And so I don't think Apple needs a monstrous new hit or anything. I don't think they need to necessarily redesign the iPhone. If they just do what they do well and stick to it and don't go with the throw everything at the wall approach, they'll succeed. But if they go back to the whole old days of we're going to have 50 different versions of our PCs and every little iteration of our devices, it could be a mess.
I think Keith 512 may have nailed it here in the chat room. He says the fanboy bubble popped. And I don't think it's necessarily referring to the customers. I think the fanboys in the investment community, their bubble popped. And I don't think Apple has really changed the way they do things all that much. They did hit a pattern there for a couple of years, and all of us are thrown off that pattern when they changed it. But Apple has historically said, we will put products out when we think they're ready. And I think that's what we're seeing here. There's also there are lots of other factors in the supply chain that will change how things happen. There was a glut in displays at one point, and display manufacturers had to cut back. Now we're seeing that, oh, maybe we're not making enough of these. The sales figures have been strong, and an 8% earnings increase is certainly not a bad thing for Apple to report if that's what they end up reporting. So I think this is just kind of a natural swing back from over-enthusiasm to under-enthusiasm.
Well, and I mean, if the rumors of a lower-priced, cheaper iPhone are true, and that does well in emerging markets, this might be a very different conversation in a quarter or two.
All right, let's talk about Windows 8.1. Now, we mentioned this briefly last week, The Verge reporting that we would probably be getting a way to boot straight to the desktop in the next version of Windows. And IaaS, it looks like they may have a little bit more information about the start button coming back, too.
Yeah, a new report on The Verge by Tom Warren says that Windows 8.1 is kind of bringing back the start button. Now, what you're going to see in the desktop feature is on the bottom left, you're going to see a Windows flag, but clicking that is going to bring up the is going to bring you the start screen. You're not going to get the old start menu back. That the flag looks a lot like what you'd see in the charms bar. And this goes along with that story that Tom was talking about last week, where Microsoft's tweaking Windows 8 so that it has more functionality that seems to have alienated a bunch of people. Tom, if the start button does come back this way, where you clicking this button brings you to the start screen, is this the right way to bring it back, or should Microsoft go all the way and go, here's your menu?
I think they should go all the way. Although I think that's what's going to, everyone's complaining the start button is gone, right? As soon as the start button comes back, everyone's going to be complaining that the start menu is gone, because what they're complaining about is it doesn't work the way it used to, and I want it to work the way it used to. So without giving them the option to bring everything back, I think it is a little silly to put the start button back down there, and then when it goes to the Metro screen or the tile screen, everybody's going to complain again. That's what I would expect.
Sarah, do you think Microsoft should just stick to its guns? What's the point in bringing back this little flag if it doesn't really do anything? I think the flag replaces a little slice that will bring you back too. So what's the big deal?
I have no idea what the big deal is about this. I mean, the whole thing is starting to sound a little silly to me. I mean, this is all because we want to appease people who just don't like the idea that things look different. I understand that, but now it's like, will it or will it not return to Microsoft? Microsoft obviously wanted to strip this out. There's been a bit of a backlash. Now it's like, well, do you reverse what was a design and UI change? Is it too late? Is it enough? Will it save Windows? I think Windows, the issues that people might be having with the newest version of Windows go beyond this.
I think it's a strange step back, because I was looking at all the changes that are supposed to come out with Blue. All of these new panels, control panels, are going to be built into that Metro style interface. And yes, I know they call it modern UI, but whatever you want to call it, we still call it Metro. So they're building a lot of these powerful tools into this start screen. And then they're still giving this option, theoretically, to boot to the desktop and then bring back this little flag. I don't think it makes any sense for Microsoft when it comes to appeasing people. They're not going to appease people. They didn't seem to have this kind of attitude when it came to that ribbon in Office. They said, look, this is the new version of it. You're just going to have to learn to love it, or we're not going to change it very much. We may flatten it, but we're not going to remove it. I think that the start button coming back in this way, it's just going to cause more people to get angry, saying, where's the menu? I want the menu. I just don't think it's that big a deal in the first place. And I'm just kind of curious, though, how much politics had to do with this as well. Tom, do you think there's anything about Sinofsky leaving making this coming true?
What's that?
Do you think there's anything about Sinofsky leaving that would allow something like this to come back?
Yeah. We talked about that last week. I mean, I think the idea that things have changed after a major executive has left makes it a fair question to wonder, like, oh, okay, maybe this is some people getting the upper hand again. Or maybe it's just good, testing and response to the market, saying, hey, we thought this would work. And we see that in actual behavior testing, people are, they're mousing down to that start charm so much. And we're seeing feedback that they'd like that button back, that we might as well make it available for people. But yeah, whether we're talking about boot to desktop, whether we're talking about the start menu, it's all a balance of how much do you nudge people down the road to change, and how much do you give them the ability to go back and do things the way they're familiar with? And I think that's the tension that you're seeing there. Menu, please, was what I was saying when you asked me the question. That joke is now lost. Sorry. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Squarespace introduces a new commerce solution that allows you to instantly create a store and start selling your stuff. Doesn't matter if it's real stuff or digital stuff. Well, digital stuff's real, but, physical things in the meat space world or digital things that you sell on the internet. It can handle all of that with fast merchant accounts set up so that you can accept payments right away by credit or debit card. One interface for order management, for tracking your orders, for providing customer email updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. And Squarespace Commerce is included in the business plan subscription, and that starts at $24 per month when you sign up for a year, or $30 a month on the monthly plan. Squarespace gives you and your website the best mobile experience, too. They've developed those templates with mobile-ready, responsive designs. That means your site automatically restructures to look great on any device, and, of course, means you get a mobile-ready store. With that new commerce solution, you can impress your friends at cocktail parties. Like, oh yeah, I've got a mobile store already with mobile responsive design. Check it out on your phone or your tablet. It's going to look different, but it's going to look right. That's actually what I love about these mobile templates. They don't just make a mobile version that's all crippled like some websites do. They make a mobile version that's everything that your regular version is, just adapted so that it works better on that screen size. But you don't have to take my word for it. Go sign up for a Squarespace.com account. It's free. You don't even need to give them a credit card number to try it out. Just start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT4 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget about free domain registrations for annual plan customer subscriptions. At Squarespace.com, use that offer code TNT4. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support. Google Now is something that you Android fans like Jason rave about all the time. And apparently it's going to be coming to the desktop on the homepage.
Like Sarah mentioned, the Google operating system blog dug into some source code at Google's pages and found Google Now may be coming to Google's homepage. In the code, there are mentions of Google Now and the ability to edit your home location or your work location. And the Google operating system blog had a bunch of examples, example images to show you what this kind of thing would look like. They showed off a Chrome extension that offers a Google Now style info, as well as the Google search app on the Nexus 10. Again, showing you a Google search on the top with the Google Now cards underneath. Rob, Google Now integration with Google's homepage. Is this a cool feature or is this just iGoogle 2.0?
It definitely feels like iGoogle 2.0. It feels rather retro. It feels like we're going back in time here a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably time to add a little bit more to the Google landing page. But I kind of wonder really how many people go to the main Google search page today anyway. So I guess that may be a way for them to drive people back to their homepage again.
Sarah, it seems like the only time I ever hear people going to the Google homepage is to see a Google Doodle of the day. Will this make people go, you know what, I'm going to make this my homepage. When I open up my browser, I'm going to have a homepage again. How very 1997.
I'm always surprised that as many people notice the Google Doodle, because I have a lot of friends who will say, oh, the Doodle today is so good. So I'll sometimes be like, if enough people say so, I'm like, okay, I'll go to Google.com and see what I'm missing. But otherwise, no, it's not something that I ever use, ever, ever, ever. But Google Now is really, really popular. People love it. iGoogle was basically a bunch of widgets when you wanted to search for something. So this is the next generation of that. It's important information based on you, your habits, the things that you search for, the things that you care about. And if implemented correctly, can make actually Google.com a destination again. And I think that's cool.
Tom, you got Marissa Meyer stripping down Yahoo a bit, making it simpler and simpler. Could the Google homepage get a little bit more cluttered, or is this something they should avoid entirely?
Yeah, you read my mind, right? Because Marissa Meyer is famous for being the one that defended the simplicity of the Google homepage. And now that she's been gone for almost a year, they're starting to encroach on her white space. Google Now is the right way to encroach, if you're going to encroach, I guess, because it is relevant and people who use it love it. And it actually really does work. So maybe this is a good thing to put there. On the other hand, you're going to see Yahoo continually removing that iGoogle type of stuff from the Yahoo homepage. My guess is you'll see that get simpler and simpler. So we're going to see the convergence of the Google and Yahoo homepages in complexity to reach some sort of equitable balance.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Google homepage right now. There's an animated, I don't know what the heck this is, this doodle. And then there's that black bar on the top, and there's my own pictures. I'm signed in, a notification. Back when I was a kid, it was just Google. It was something simple. Now it's getting a little bit more cluttered. I'm just kind of curious if this design is going to start irritating.
It's hard to call that cluttered.
Well, compared to the old Google, that's what cluttered is. So it's not that that big a difference. But I'm really curious, if they put in Google Now, are people going to just start going, I don't want to use this service. I don't want to see that Google knows everything I'm doing. Because I quite like it personally.
But it's something that you could opt out of. So if you've got that option, why not give people more choice?
Well, you know, every time we see people opt out of stuff with Facebook, that they run that really well, right? People, there's never a huge concern about opting out.
But I mean, with Google Plus and Google wanting everything to be so connected, I mean, it's not as if I'm surprised by this, right? It's people are already annoyed. Like, wait, hold on a second. If I you know, leave a comment on YouTube, then it's going to link back to my Google Plus account, and there's all sorts of stuff. This is, I mean, Google wants it to be this way. But yeah, I mean, if you have an option to turn it off and have a nice big white page, then you're keeping everybody happy, right?
I welcome our Google overlords. I'm totally fine with this.
Think about the actual timing of this. Is there any ramp up here that they're trying to do around trying to get your personalized content into Google Glass? So
there's that iOS coming up in a couple of weeks. So maybe if they put this all together, Android and Chrome getting closer and closer, now they have the same head.
Glass could be a tertiary factor here for sure, but I think Google I/O an even bigger one if they're going to launch some other aspect of Google now. That's a good point. All right, let's talk about the comedy festival that Comedy Central, a cable channel here in the United States, is having. Where are they having this comedy festival? Where should I get tickets?
On Twitter, Tom. What? In fact, you don't even need tickets.
Twickets.
Twickets. New term. Inadvertent term. Yes. Happy Monday. Comedy Fest. Actually, hashtag Comedy Fest would be where you could sort of follow along with the comedy festival on Twitter. And I actually chose the story, Tom, just for you because you were so unimpressed with the whole BBC America Twitter teaming up story from last week where you were like, this is basically just marketing. You know, they're gonna show you little clips on Twitter. What's the big deal? But this is kind of interesting. Basically, comedies are going to be posting video snippets of their routines, some roundtable discussions, posting jokes using this Comedy Fest hashtag. As part of the festival, the comedian Steve Agee, is that how you say his last name? He's going to host a Vine dining party, which is basically using the app Vine to tell stories in in really short 6-second videos. You've got the cast of HBO sharing the HBO show Veep sharing vines from their set. So it's not as if it's just, you know, Comedy Central stuff. It's sort of comedy in general. But what's interesting about Comedy Central, and I think what's pointing to not just, hey, we should work with Twitter because it's a really good way to promote our comedians and our events, is that Comedy Central has a young male audience. I mean, that is their sweet spot of the demographic. And they have been moving to basically keep up with their audience that has moved to a lot of viewing content on the web. Next month, they're going to have a new ad-supported app called CC Stand Up, sort of a place for you to watch, you know, little snippets of comedians and that sort of thing, if that's what you're into. And Steve Grimes, which is Comedy Central's Senior Vice President for Programming and Multiplatform, says, one of these days, we will be ambivalent about where people watch Comedy Central, which I think is a really smart way to think about it. Right now, it's a little bit clunky. How do you make sure that you're not losing people who are contributing to the traditional Nielsen ratings and that sort of thing, but account for the people who want to watch your content and are just doing it in different ways? Do Twitter and comedy, does that make sense? Do you think that Comedy Central will benefit from more clips being shared via Twitter?
I think so. When you go to the Comedy Central homepage, you try to see clips. They're usually 30 seconds or so. Having these shorter clips and having it on Twitter, if these jokes aren't funny, they're really short. That's usually one of the bigger things about Twitter, which what I enjoy and why I would even bother watching Vine videos at all, is that you don't really lose too much time. What happens is you will keep reading and watching these videos, so you can lose hours and hours if the content is good enough. I think it's intelligent that Comedy Central wants to be the face of comedy, as opposed to having these clips show up on YouTube or show up somewhere else. I think it's kind of strange, though, Comedy Central saying in the future, we don't want to care if they watch it on cable or not, because I think Viacom owns them, and Viacom's got this huge issue with putting things online.
Well, yeah, but it's like they've got an issue because they're dragging their feet, but they know, at least some people within the Viacom universe know that's you can't really ignore it. Rob, Fred Graver, who's the head of TV over at Twitter, says partnering with Comedy Central and other entities is not about becoming some sort of a TV distribution platform. It's that if you have better relationships with programmers like this it'll eventually lead to more people joining Twitter. It's where you get content, all sorts of media content. Do you agree that that's a good strategy?
Yeah, I think this has been going on for quite a few years now through YouTube, but it's been copyright infringement for all these years. So now that the big media companies are jumping into it and really taking advantage of it now, we'll tap into that same kind of social TV type thing. But I think fundamentally this is really about a social TV marketing strategy and trying to share clips and get people to connect with the Comedy Central brand. And along the way, it helps activity around Twitter, and people make those connections. That it's really a win-win for both companies, I think.
Yeah, I want to wait and see how good the jokes are on Vine.
Yeah,
but it seems
that's
like
true.
that's a good usage of Vine, is to come up with a little punchline type stuff. And I agree with you, Rob. This is a clever marketing on Comedy Central's point, and it's a good timing for them to cancel Futurama the day that they launch this. So maybe that'll provide some cover for them that they're doing something else fun out there. But as to your point, one of these days we will be ambivalent about where people watch Comedy Central. Is downright heretical for someone who's a Viacom employee to say, but at the same time, inevitable. They had to know that day is coming. And so to hear someone finally saying, yeah, we know that day is coming, reminds me of some of the things HBO executives have been saying about piracy is bad, we're not for it, but we also know that it means people really like our stuff, and we think we can outcompete it by providing better ways to access our stuff through HBO Go, et cetera, et cetera. So this is just what I think we all thought was going to happen eventually, which is elements of the industry start to admit that they get it. Lots of them have got it for a long time, but the conditions are right now that they can actually come forward and say it. Let's finish up with controlling your Samsung Galaxy Note with your brain, shall we? It's not the randomizer.
It's so crazy.
I thought you were leading to it. Sorry, I had the wrong page, obviously, queued up here.
But the Samsung Emergency Technology Lab, in collaboration with Rozoba Jafari, an assistant professor of electrical engineering at the University of Texas, Dallas, is working on a mind control interface for mobile phones. Does sound like randomizer type stuff. What happens is you launch an application, you select a contact, you select a song from a playlist, you power up or power down, all by focusing on a shape, the shape of a cursor. It's a cap studded with EEG monitoring electrodes. And if you're thinking those things take 45 minutes to set up, I'm a doctor, I know this because you have to put the liquid and all the stuff. They've got a new one that takes 10 seconds to set up because it's dry. You just put the cap on, kind of adjust it, make sure it's working. And they say that it'll take a while for this to reach the marketplace, but they expect eventually to be able to sell you a cap, the kind of cap that you could just wear all day, that then would allow you to mind control elements of your smartphone. Rob, so we got Google glasses, we got Apple wristbands maybe coming. You got your Samsung cap now. And we're going to be just wearing all of our technology, right?
Yeah, I think it's a fashion statement, I think, is what we're looking at here. I think if you think about the combination of Google Glass and this cap, I think it's the next cutting fashion trend, I think.
Sarah, what will these devices have to do to make you go out of the house wearing them all?
People suggesting it's an app cap in the chat room.
It's an app cap.
Yeah, something glitter. I don't know. Yeah, I'm thinking of...
Hey, look, it's mine.
Well, the way it looks right now, would you wear that? It looks like it's a gray sock you wear on your head with red dots on it.
I've actually had to do like a real EEG, you know, where you like... there's all this glue all over your head, and it's a huge mess. And so to me, I'm just like, it's messy, it's ugly.
But this is a dry cap. They're not going to have to deal with the glue.
I understand I mean, this is also not an elegant solution at all. This reminds me of something that is painful... and not
cute. What if
cute.
It's just a toque?
Look
what
at the, look at the cord
just...
management alone. I mean...
okay, but that's not what it's going to look like eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're being a little tough on it here. I think it's... there's going to be ways that they can build in sensors into our bodies eventually that won't be so ugly looking, I'm sure.
I love Samsung. They're just crazy. I mean, they have their phones right now. They track your eyes. You look away and it pauses videos, all this kind of stuff. And now they're saying, look, just focus on a shape and you can use your tablet. It sounds crazy, but Samsung is trying some way out there things. And for some reason, they're showing it off. Other than the fact that it's showing off as a technical demo, I'm kind of curious why they're publishing this information right now. Is this something that people are excited about?
This kind of technology has been around for years. They've been doing it with animals, and then they've been doing it for accessibility for people who don't have control of arms and legs. There's a couple of toys out there that you can buy that you put a little cap on, and you can like make a ball levitate. They're very simple stuff. But what Samsung is saying is like, hey, we know this technology is out there. We're trying to adapt it to the phone because we want to be seen as the innovators in the world of cell phones. I think that's what's going
on. Password management. Like, I'm thinking of a shape that's got 85 sides because I can't remember what my password is, but I remember it's got 85 sides. And then boom.
How do they send you your password on password?
And one of those sides is uppercase. One of those sides is numerical.
Can't remember. I know it's kind of squiggly. The whole shape is squiggly. So that must be it.
They're going to have to be able to implant images in your mind for password recovery in that case. That could cause issues.
Just, you know, without the cap.
You know what? I wanted to give a couple of corrections. First of all, I think I mentioned Apple earnings on Thursday. I misspoke. They are tomorrow. They are Tuesday.
That's You'll in find the calendar. Jeez. Spoiler.
You wanted to correct me. I'm sorry. Also, Twickets is apparently a two-day pass at Six Flags. I didn't.
Sweetie Bird. Oh,
now it's time for the rant. Two
randomizers. There's nothing better than two randomizers in one show.
A new video is showing off multi-directional treadmill movement with the Oculus Rift. This is a product called the Omni. So we already have accessories for the Oculus Rift, even though it actually isn't out yet. But instead of moving with your fingers, which kind of removes you from the effect of being immersed in a virtual world, the Omni would let you walk, and then it would move. It would rotate. It's a circular thing so that you can just move your feet and walk around in whatever video game or virtual world you're exploring.
Okay, I'm mesmerized.
Yeah, I think this is awesome, actually. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, you can get some exercise, and you can play games, and you won't actually fall over.
And apparently Virtuix, the folks who make the Omni, has been showing off this for a while now. But now that it's paired up in a video with the Oculus Rift, everybody's paying attention.
It changes the gameplay dynamic or mechanics, obviously. But like being able to turn on a dime and go immediately backwards, much more difficult in this world than it is with a little controller in your hand.
I want to see this
married first-person shooter exercise. Come on.
Yeah.
I want to see it married to Google Street View or something. I want to be able to walk to somewhere before I walk there.
That'd
be
awesome.
Look around. Because this would be good for like treadmills and just running in general if you wanted to do
totally.
This.
Totally.
Playing games is one application, which I think is fantastic because you don't have to think about which controller button does what. But this could get a lot of people, a lot of exercise. I don't think they would get.
I want to play track and field.
I want to play some Tecmo Bowl.
There we go.
They're going to do a Kickstarter for it, and they think that they can hopefully get the price point around $1,000 for this. So it's not going to be cheap, but, you know, it's price of a laptop, essentially.
I want to see full-on tournaments with a room filled with these things. And everybody going to town on the same day.
I like your Street View idea. I mean, even if it wasn't the like latest satellite imagery, if you could even be in almost like a cartoonish version of like ancient Rome, right?
Yeah.
And you're walking through it or something, like, I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. That would be great.
Just, I don't need the world, gun or anything. Right? I just want to walk through
ancient Rome. You don't want a gun while you're in ancient Rome?
No.
They'd be like, you're some kind of wizard.
That's just stressful. I want to saunter through.
Just want to take a jog.
Yeah.
Just pour yourself a glass of wine before you go to Paris. And
anything happened to Sarah on her way to the forum?
I want to hold a parasol.
Let's take a break and thank our brand new sponsor on Tech News Today. Please welcome 99 Designs. 99 Designs connects the world with great graphic designers to create fast, affordable graphic designs. Here's how it works. You got a design project you need done? Tell 99 Designs what you need. Dozens of designers from their community will submit quality designs created just for you. Give the designers your feedback to help them refine their designs and then select and pay for your favorite. 99 Designs provides more than 210,000 graphic designers worldwide available to work on your project. World-class customer support 24/7 over the phone, email, and chat. Complimentary design consultations with the San Francisco design team for all your branding needs. And get this, 100% money-back guarantee. You can do logos. Those run from $300 on up. Web design, digital marketing collateral, Facebook pages, print marketing. You need some brochures, some flyers, some menus made, apparel design, things like T-shirts and hoodies, mobile app design, and more. You can start right now for as low as $199 for your own custom graphic design. Visit 99designs.com/TNT. That's two numbers, 99designs.com/TNT. And get a $99 power pack of services for free. For free. You don't have to pay the $99. Power pack gives you more designer time and attention, and 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in 99 Designs Marketplace, so you'll get nearly twice as many designs submitted. You can also call 800-513-1678. Designated for our TWIT listeners. That's 800-513-1678. Again, 800-513-1678. Visit 99designs.com/TNT. today, and we thank 99 Designs for their support of Tech News Today. Besides what I already talked about, what else is on the calendar today, sir?
Well, besides Apple earnings, AT&T is also announcing earnings tomorrow. Plus, we got a couple of concerts. not concerts, conferences. I am just making up stuff today. Fast Company's Innovation Uncensored starts tomorrow in New York. It runs through Wednesday the 24th. Also next in Berlin. It's a conference, obviously, in Germany, starting tomorrow, too, running through the 24th. Nokia is teasing a QWERTY phone announcement on April 24th, so that's just 2 days from now on Wednesday. And the Samsung Galaxy S4 is launching in India on Friday, April 26th.
Also, Money 2004 is a doctor's appointment. Don't forget that, Money 2004. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Rich in lovely Cleveland. Tom and Posse, I think people are overthinking the whole Evernote getting into hardware thing. When I think of Evernote, I think of a flat application that a user can use to build on for something as mundane as shopping lists to researching and writing a novel. I've often mused how easily it could be used to replace the current clunky database front end used in my place of employment. I'd like to see Evernote put out something similar on the hardware end, kind of a combination between a Wemo, Twine, and a Raspberry Pi, a super open, consumer-accessible hardware platform that is what you make of it. I don't know what the use case would necessarily be, but that's what makes sense to me coming from Evernote. And Rich is talking about that story about the Evernote CEO talking about jetpack time machines as their entry into hardware, in 2015. This is an interesting idea of open source, an open platform. I just don't know if Evernote's going to do that.
Could be, though. That's cool.
Got another email from Derek Chen. Hey, Derek, who says, I have no information on what the BBC America Twitter deal actually entails, but I am reminded of a special promotional content piece BBC America ran with an episode of Doctor Who last year. It was sponsored by AT&T, but was essentially extra Doctor Who content running during a standard commercial pod as the show aired. Perhaps they're testing new ways to monetize similar programs across other platforms. And then he links us to an Ad Age story that explained the deal back in the day.
Cool. Good stuff. Thank you, Derek. And thank you, Rob Greenlee. Thank you for joining us, sharing your insights with us, and let folks know about the new media show.
Well, the new media show's on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's Pacific Standard Time. And we talk about new media topics, video streaming. If you're a content provider, come join us and learn the latest news and hardware and all that kind of stuff that we talk about on the show every week. We have great guests on the show that can give some insight into ways to build your own content provider network or just do a YouTube video. So it's some great tips there. So
Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 Eastern. What's the URL?
It's actually newmediashow.com.
Excellent. Check it out. Thanks again, Rob.
All right. Thank you, guys. It was fun.
And, of course, you can find our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place where you can vote on stories, make some comments on the ones people have submitted, and submit your own. Vote them up or down. We take a look at it every day when we make the lineup, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can also find us any time of day, night or day, at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with an all-new show, and David Spark joins us as our guest. We'll see you then.